And welcome back to Fully Equipped, Golf.com's gear-focused podcast, where you take weekly PGA Tour news and relate it to golfers of all skill levels. I'm Tim Briand, Executive Vice President of TruSpec Golf, joined by Jonathan Wall, Managing Editor for Equipment for Golf.com, and Andrew Tursky, Senior Equipment Editor for Golf.com as well. Gentlemen, what's happening? It's been a while.
Welcome back, Professor.
Thanks for having me back, man. Yeah, it's good to be back. Good to be back in some cadence of normality here. So it's good to see your faces. Andrew, welcome to Fully Equipped. You are now officially a part of the team as you are recording today from the comfort of your car. What's going on here?
I'm reporting live.
Can't stop
I'm reporting live from the media lot, parking lot B.
Why not the media tent?
There you go.
Which tournament are
you
at?
There's no media tent.
No media tent.
I'm at the ANA Inspiration, Mission Hills, Palm Desert, California. There's no media tent. There's no workspace. I tried to sneak into a little members area. I got kicked out. So we're doing it live from the
We're going to do it live.
I love it. J-Wall, where were you in your car when we recorded? You were off of some interstate in Texas, were you not?
I was off the road. I was coming back from downtown Dallas trying to get back for an interview with Colin Morikawa. And yep. I was like literally in a parking lot right next to DFW Airport. And the planes are just roaring overhead.
I remember
as
that.
Trying to do this interview. Yeah, it was brutal. So brutal.
You do what you got to do.
That's
for
right.
The people.
Tim's been in Beverly Hills, right? You were in a parking garage in Beverly Hills?
I was on the side of the road. I was on the side of the road right next to Wilshire Boulevard. Actually, right. At the end of recording, got told to move by Beverly Hills Finest. So, yeah, I've been there. We've all been there and done that, Tursky. We know how it goes. All for the people, like you said. So with that, let's get started.
It's like hazing. You're not part of the team until you do a podcast.
Exactly
in the car.
Right. The next one, you got to do one from a coat closet, and then you're officially on board. So, with that, let's get into.
I'm doing the next one from the studio.
That's true.
You're so entitled, Andrew.
Air conditioning there.
This is fun, but
so know. Entitled, Andrew. Whatever happened to the dedication to bring the story out? Come on. So, with that,
this is it right now. You're looking at dedication.
I love it. With that, let's get into episode 58. We've got kind of a season in review episode. PGA Tour season just ended last week with the Tour Championship, and lo and behold, they're off and racing again. We got the Safeway, excuse me. We got the Safeway this week, getting started for the new season. So, be interesting to see how the new season kicks off. But before we get into that, want to talk about kind of our takeaways from the 2019-2020 PGA Tour season as it relates to gear. Going to talk about a gear spotlight today regarding a limited edition Scotty Cameron putter that Jay Wall's got some intel on. Really cool idea. Got a mailbag question regarding Tony Finau's driver. And this week, we are going to take a break on the interview format for the week. We've got a bunch of them lined up for you over the coming weeks with some really cool interview guests. With that, let's kick off episode 58. So, what is the number one story for you guys coming out of the 19-20 PGA Tour season as it relates to gear? J-Wall, lead us off.
I always like leading it off, so get mine out of the way. I think as we discussed off air, it's kind of one of those situations where there weren't a ton of storylines this year pertaining to gear, at least not notable ones that lasted for, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks and then on into the coming months. So for me, it's something that I actually saw back in, I guess in February when I was at Riviera. You know, that was the time when I saw Bryson with a brand new LAGP multi-material putter shaft. KBS was testing a new putter shaft with a significantly tapered tip. You had Odyssey with the multi-material Stroke Lab shaft. And I think that was the moment when I kind of figured, man, this isn't just a fad. You know, multi-material putter shafts are kind of going to become a thing. We had seen Kevin Na at Shriners. I think it was 558 feet worth of putts that he made that week. I know it was the most in the ShotLink era since they started recording that data for the PGA Tour. And, you know, we saw Ricky Fowler go with the multi-material shaft. Mentioned Bryson, Hideki Matsuyama here recently using an LAGP. You know, we've seen a whole lot of Odyssey staffers and guys who aren't on staff with Odyssey using the Stroke Lab. And I think what we're seeing now is we've gone from, you know, this transition from blades to mallets. We're seeing a whole group of players now using mallets, some of them with toe hang to mimic blades so they can have that, you know, for an arcing stroke. So that eliminates one of the hurdles for guys that maybe couldn't use a mallet in the past. And now it's like, well, what do you do next? And that's what I think we're seeing here with these multi-material shafts, is it's another way to add stability to the head. And I think that's what a lot of players are looking for, is something that's going to be extremely consistent and stable. And we're now seeing a lot of major manufacturers, and even some that are really starting to bust into the space, like LAGP, you know, they're starting to make some noise out on tour. So for me, it's multi-material putter shafts. I do not think this is a fad. I think it's going to continue in the space for a long time. And I think it's that evolution of technology. We always talk about what's next. You know, there was always growth in the putter space. I kind of figured it would go beyond just, you know, face designs and different insert types. And this is that next evolution, is the multi-material putter shafts that we're now seeing out there on tour.
Have you putted much with the multi-material shaft, J-Wall?
A little bit. You know, it's one of those things that for me, it takes a little bit of getting used to, but I have noticed now that the shafts are starting to mimic more of a steel feel, it's a little bit easier to get used to using something that isn't traditional steel. So I'm fully on board continuing to test it. You know, and I try not to let what's going on tour dictate what I test. But it's difficult not to look at the number of guys that are now either using or testing multi-material products in their putter and not go, yeah, I mean, if they're doing it, got to give it a real shot, instead of just, you know, rolling a couple of putts with it and saying, hey, thanks. So I'll definitely be giving it a harder look. What about you? Have either one of you guys used multi-material?
I'll let Andrew answer first.
I mean, I've messed around with them a little bit. I do use a steel shaft still right now. I'm actually curious to hear what Tim says about, because I'm sure you've done a lot of testing between steel versus graphite or steel versus multi-material, and I'm wondering what you see, like, stability-wise. Does that hold up, what J-Wall was
saying? Yeah, I mean, you're going to get – carbon fiber gives a designer the widest latitude with product design, usually. You can make them extremely flexible, extremely light, very active, or you can make them significantly stiffer in many cases than steel, actually, both for torsional control as far as like torque and the twisting of the shaft, and then as far as deflection and stuff like that, the way the shaft is bending. You know, this has been a long time coming with putter shafts, so I don't think a lot of folks realize this. I would say about 5 years ago, I had Ralph Reichert, who's the president of Oban, reach out to me regarding putter shafts and just trying to reimagine steel putter shafts. And I know that they had worked with the folks at Oban and designing a super premium putter shaft that's, you know, price point wise is up there, as elevated as any product, I think, as far as quality and all the above. You know, Acra was working with a few different putter shafts, carbon fiber, for a while, that had different flex profiles. And then you started to see this in the mainstream with the OEMs, where you started to see Stroke Lab and then Stability Shaft. I remember a conversation with Barney Adams, who was kind of one of the brainchilds behind Stability Shaft. You know, the first prototype of the Stability Shaft, it was like this red and orange and gold looking thing. It looked like, you know, something that Iron Man created, and it was just not marketable. And in order to hide that stability shaft, you know, you kind of need to make it a deeper tone, like a black or gunmetal or something like that. So these premium shafts have been in the works for many years now, and we're now starting to see them adopted out on tour. As far as your question, Andrew, does it hold any weight? Does it have any merit? I would say that yes. Like when you look at the LAGP white putter shaft, the reason they went to multi-material there is weight. Because in order to add the amount of structure and stability they need for the shaft to play stiffer, and by stiffer meaning more stable. If you were to do that with conventional steel, you'd have to make it so darn heavy that the overall assembly of the club would be too heavy really to play. It wouldn't be a playable putter. With multi-material design, carbon fiber design, it allows them to stiffen up the shaft significantly while not adding all of that significant weight that they would through, you know, some kind of alloy material or steel. So I do see that it enhances stability in the shaft, meaning that it cuts down on the amount of bending in the shaft and the amount of twisting. And I think that there are some players that need some of that help. Do all players need help with massive stability in their putter? Some people would argue yes. What I always go back to, though, is that the really elite putters that I've ever been around are actually playing shafts that are fairly more active. I remember spending some time with Christy Kerr a couple months back, and I showed you guys a couple pictures of a fluted double bend Odyssey shaft. And had you ever seen a fluted double bend shaft before? And the reason that fluted double bend shaft was unique is because she specifically wanted it to have some of the flex profiles of some of those older fluted shafts. So she wanted to feel flex in the shaft. I think it really comes down to what you're looking for as a player. You know, I think whether you need it or don't need it is, like so many other things, player dependent. Are you looking for something that's maximum stability, that maybe it corrupts feel a little bit, but it will help you with consistency? If you're that type of player, then I think, you know, maybe giving a look at some of these putter shaft products makes sense. If you're somebody that's super feel dependent and you like to feel the ball on the face, you like to feel miss hits when you do miss hit a putt, you're somebody that likes to feel the shaft bend a little bit while you make a putting stroke. If you're one of those players that's kind of old school, more traditional, I think you may find a little bit of a challenge working with some of these multi-material and carbon fiber products that are super stiff. They do make carbon fiber and multi-material putter shaft products that aren't as stiff. So maybe you want to look down that, you know, that product tree. But it's definitely been interesting.
Who would need to change into a multi-material putter shaft for this product to go mainstream?
Like a super stiff multi-material, like you're getting LAGP and stuff like that. Somebody that has a lot of variation, I would say, that lacks some consistency. You know, if you take 10 putts, maybe their average is pretty good, but their deviation tends to be a little bit broader than you would like. Some of that deviation comes from striking it in a different place on the face. If you're getting fractionally more face twisting because the shaft is a higher torque, that could be losing a little bit of energy and causing a little bit of a face angle issue at the moment of impact. Although, you know, for all intents and purposes, once the ball has been struck by the club, pretty much the ball's almost gone instantly. So it's not like the ball stays attached to the face on a putter for a long length of time. But the other issue would be, you know, if you have a putting stroke that was very quick paced, where you had a pretty quick transition from backstroke to throughstroke, that's going to cause the shaft to deflect. Just like, you know, if you have somebody in a full swing that really whips the shaft at the transition, somebody with a putter shaft that has a quick transition backstroke to throughstroke, that's going to cause more deflection in the shaft, and that could cause an issue with some consistency. So in general, I would say quicker pace strokes, people that struggle with consistency, both with accuracy and speed differentiation and deviation, I would say that they tend to profile the best for these types of putter shafts.
Could Tiger benefit from a multi-material shaft? I know we keep talking about. I mean, seriously, could he benefit from it?
I would say this.
You talking about him using a mallet or?
Based upon what I've seen out of his Sam Putt Lab metrics, he's got probably the most consistent putting stroke on tour. So I would say probably no, because his issue isn't necessarily a consistency issue. Whatever he does, he from what I've seen, he repeats it better than most. And when I say better than most, I mean better than most tour players. But you get a player out there that's like really streaky, that goes through those periods where they're very inconsistent, leave one short, live one long, miss one left, miss one right. Maybe that would benefit them. I mean, obviously, what we saw out of Kevin Na with those yards and yards and yards of putts that he made, he was putting pretty consistently that day, and he's already a pretty good putter. So, but it's definitely been interesting to see how this equipment category has proliferated. I didn't put a lot of merit in it a couple years back when I had a couple conversations with different manufacturers and designers. I didn't ever see it really capturing and taking hold. But here's the question. Do you think it goes away this coming year, 2021, on the PGA Tour? Do you think we see less multi-material shaft designs and putters or more?
I mean, I'll say more. I just said it was the most.
I think it's more too.
Equipment story. Yeah, I think we see more. I mean, Hideki's using it now, and I know Hideki goes through putters.
Yeah.
Regularly, but I mean, now he's trying a different putter shaft. So yeah, I think we see more guys. Give it a try.
How about you, Tursky? More or less, as far as carbon fiber and multi-material putter shafts on the tour next year to this year.
I would say more, especially as putter companies put multi-material or graphite shafts into their retail lines.
Yep.
I mean, they're going to keep pushing that on tour, and then the more it pops up on tour, the more it pops up in, you know, amateurs bags across the country. So
And it's definitely, you know, absolutely, when you're looking at putter designers and putter companies, it behooves them to have a custom putter shaft in the lineup that they can charge a premium for, you know, and it increases the amount of revenue that they're collecting when they make, you know, when they generate a sale. So there is a business side of this that I think, you know, a lot of putter manufacturers have wanted to add enhanced options, whether it be through an enhanced, you know, shaft offering or an enhanced grip offering or something that's going to allow you to charge a little bit more of a premium for that general off the rack putter and customize it. You know, all of the different putter manufacturers out there are looking to have an offering where they can kind of upgrade the off the rack putter. So I agree with you. I think that it's a point of emphasis with all the OEMs. They're going to continue to support it with the tour. And as long as it's being supported and pushed at the tour level, I think you're going to see more and more guys adopt it. And you may start to see more consumers with it in the bags on the weekend. So with that, let's get into Tursky's number one equipment story from the 2020 PGA Tour season. What do you think it is, Andrew?
Well, it hurts my heart to say, and I'm pretty sure we talk about this on like every podcast now, but you know, it's the reemergence of hybrids out on tour. You got Rory, Dustin, Fleetwood, and not just hybrids to Jay Wall's point off camera. You know, high lofted fairway woods too, 7 woods, 9 woods, 5 woods. It's all these clubs that, you know, for the last like 10 years I've tried to keep out of my bag, and now it's like, It's almost, you know, you got to test it, you got to try it, because it's working for all these PGA Tour players who, even for them, like, they weren't using hybrids before. You never saw Dustin with a hybrid or a 7-wood or anything crazy like that. And now I'm out here this week on the LPGA Tour asking these ladies about hybrids, and they're basically calling male amateur golfers idiots if they're playing any more than a 5-iron.
I love it.
You know? I mean, the lowest lofted iron in anyone's bag out here is a 5-iron. There's a couple of rare 4-irons, but you know, other than that, they're playing at least one hybrid, maybe two, and then they got a 9-wood, a 7-wood. It's like, you know, maybe I'm just wrong about it, and it hurts to say, but you know, you got to eat some crow, and I don't see it going away.
No.
In the next couple of years or the foreseeable future, I think it's only going to – people are going to keep being more and more open-minded and not just stuck in their ways with irons. And even, like, you know, the emergence of game improvement or super game improvement long irons out on tour. You know, guys are experimenting with everything across the board. They're not just stuck hitting blades, pitching wedge through three, and then, you know, it's just not like that anymore.
I woke up this morning to my first ever text message where I was getting a talking to by one of my tour player clients about why I didn't have his backup 6-wood ready. And I'm sitting here going, wow, how things have changed. Like, if I would have presented a backup 6-wood to a tour player 7-8 years ago, they'd have been like, what are you smoking? And now, I'm being, you know, dressed down in a text message over the lack of having a backup, not even the gamer, the backup 6-wood ready to go. So I understand it. I mean, at the end of the day, I think these players are starting to rely on a lot of these clubs, and a lot of this is very course dependent. I think, you know, in that transitional part of the bag, working from the long irons into the fairway woods, there's so many different variables that play into why you would use one versus another. And I think this is very player and course dependent. And truth be told, I think a lot of players have multiple options to use from the same distance. They may have a 240 shot that they have a 6-wood, a utility iron, and a hybrid that all go the same distance, but they have different flight profiles, different shot profiles, different windows, different shapes. And so they're really kind of nailing it in based upon, you know, the window they want to see for that specific golf course and those specific conditions they're playing that week. But I agree with you. I think overall what I've seen a real trend towards over this last year and a half to 2 years, which I think plays into the high, I think the tour players are more and more open-minded to their equipment than they ever have been. And whether it's 6-woods, whether it's 64-degree wedges, whether it's multi-material putter shafts, I think that finding that edge, that razor-thin edge for competing against the rest of the field, guys are willing to take some chances in areas that in the past it was kind of taboo. And nowadays it's like, well, why did I rule that out just because people in the past have ruled it out? Let me try it. Let me see what it does for my game. When you have Rory McIlroy, you know, one of the highest launching, you know, ball flight guys out on tour going to a hybrid, that gets a lot of people's attention because, you know, hybrids are designed right to launch it
and
higher.
And he plays a draw, right, too. You know, usually you see faders play hybrids because the miss with the hybrid tends to be left, right, as I know all too well. But Rory's a drawer.
He hits high draws, and hybrids in general, a lot of hybrids in the marketplace are generated to hit high draws, meaning that they would make his high draw into an even higher potential hook. So you look at Rory from just a candidate standpoint, and you know, before this year, I would have never profiled Rory for a hybrid, especially not one that was not one that was set up more retail-like with the SIM product that he'd used throughout this year. You know, when they first started with that product out on tour, it's not like that was a tour version head. To my understanding, it was almost a retail version head practically. So, yeah, I think that now that we've got some of these younger players, another part of this too, guys, is, you know, when I was a kid growing up, everybody wanted to play muscle back blades. It was like a badge of courage that you were using MP29s or MP whatevers. Well, AGAGA and junior golf has gotten so competitive. If you're that guy out there playing blades and you shouldn't, you're not going to college on a golf scholarship. It's pretty that simple. So I think
you're getting exposed.
I think that on the junior golf and development levels, that more players have been exposed to some of these 6-woods and utility clubs and hybrids and, you know, different types of equipment. And because they're introduced to it when they're in their developmental age, they don't have a problem with it when they get to be older, you know, when they're in their 20s and 30s trying to play professional golf. It's one of the things I think that's contributing to it is they grow up with these products. So therefore there's less bias or taboo, you know, with using them. So.
Yeah. Brittany Lincecum was telling me, she was like, a lot of the women's sets for juniors and for younger female golfers, like the hybrids are part of the set. It'll stop at like a 6-iron and then maybe they'll have 3 hybrids as part of, like, you know, the retail models. So she was saying that, like you were just saying, that it's not taboo, yeah, for them. It's just normal. Whereas with guys, it's kind of like an ego, yep, thing where it's like, no, I want to play a 3-iron that's a blade. And it's like, that's, yeah, that ain't the best for you, though.
You know, yeah, a lot of these guys grew up watching Tiger Woods hit stingers with a 2-iron.
Right,
you know, you want
a 2-iron that was a blade.
You want to be like your idols and be able to execute the same shots with the same club. So, I mean, I get it. You know, it's one of those things where I think every golfer goes through it at some point where there's some, you got to swallow your pride when you put, you know, maybe a certain loft in the bag or go down and flex. You know, I'm. It's just kind of one of those deals. You see the benefits. You know that maybe it's something you wouldn't have done 5 years ago, but now you're gonna move full steam ahead. So I agree with Tim. I think guys are a lot more open minded.
Yep, I've seen that a lot in fittings with tour players, that they're very quick to rule an option out, So they're just as finicky after they've hit the product. But in years past where I couldn't even get a player to hit a product, nowadays they're at least willing to give it one swing. And if they see something good out of that one swing, they'll keep trying it. And as I mentioned, the edge when it comes to performance and scoring is so razor thin that, you know, that any tenth of a shot that they can gain by having one club over another club in the bag, at the end of the day, or really better put, at the end of the year, it results in potentially hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. So it makes a lot of sense to me. And with that, I'll kind of share my thought as far as my takeaway from PGA Tour season 2019-2020. And that is the dominance of Team TaylorMade. It sure seems to me like we've got TaylorMade up on that leaderboard every week. And it seems to me like whether it's John Rahm or Rory or Tiger, it seems like that stable of players that they've put together. I know that there was a major shift in sports marketing a few years back, and they made a decision of, hey, instead of going for the quantity count, the driver count, let's not worry about the driver count as much anymore, but let's just worry that out of the top 10 players in the world, that we have the most players signed to our staff out of the top 10. And I think what you see now is, I mean, you got DJ winning over the weekend. You know, this last month that I've been off the pod, it's pretty much been the same story every week, hasn't it? DJ playing unbelievably well. Was really cool to get a chance to spend some time at the Harmon Academies down at the Floridian after that Boston win. I was able to spend some time with those guys on that Monday or Tuesday right following when he ascended to number one in the world again. But you look at that TaylorMade team and that stable of tour players, and God, they've had a lot of success over the last year. I venture to say that right now, of all the tour staffs that are out on tour, I would say they're probably having the most success.
Yeah, they've got a kind of a murderer's row, so to speak, of staffers. I mean, it's a who's who from top to bottom. And you know, it's interesting. You look at kind of what transpired after you know, when I go back to Nike leaving the space, and there was this seismic shift in you know, staffs and manufacturers weren't as inclined to just bring a whole bunch of guys into the fold like they maybe would have in the past, TaylorMade included. And you know, part of that had to do with them being acquired by a private equity firm, and you know, they had a new vision there. But it, you know, it's always kind of one of those gambles when you shift your focus on tour. For them, it's that sports marketing department, and I agree with Tim, it's paid off in a big way. They've had some pretty significant wins for their guys. You know, I think Tiger's win at the Masters last year being the most significant. But yeah, it's been a nice couple of years for Team TaylorMade for sure.
You look at their signings, right?
So they signed. Question for you guys.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's kind of big. It's kind of along the lines of what I think you were about to bring up. But yeah, there are two new signings, Morikawa.
Exactly where I was going.
You know, those contracts will probably be up soon. So which one are you going with if you have to choose just one? Because I'm assuming their prices both went up since they joined the tour.
Man, well, they're both prices of good. They both have W's under their belt. Colin has a couple extras. He's got three, I think.
Colin's
got
a big
one too. I think.
But Wolf is he's pretty marketable.
I would say that Matthew is probably a little more marketable. He's a little more recognizable with that unique golf swing that he has. But I think, you know, and I think that there are multiple majors in store for both of those guys, right? I think that the amount of talent that Matt Wolf has is just off the charts, and he's proven at every level of golf he's ever played that he's dominated, whether it was junior golf, amateur golf, collegiate golf. And when he's on the PGA Tour, I mean, it's amazing how far he hits it with how big he is. And I think he's got potential, you know, a lot of major potential in him. Obviously we've already seen that with Colin. If I had to make a decision one way or the other, I would say sign both of them and kick off one of the older guys.
I mean, that's
probably a cop-out answer, but I like it.
It's probably the most obvious situation, though. I mean, you have two guys that are moving up the ranks. You have Rahm, who's somewhat in a similar boat. You've got You've got the new guard and the old guard. I could totally see that. I think for me, you have to give credit to their sports marketing staff for signing those guys, because, you know, every year it feels like there's at least one can't miss guy coming out of college who every manufacturer wants to sign. And you've got to pony up big money for a guy that doesn't have any status. I mean, that's nowadays, that's just the way it is. And we've seen a lot of these guys pave their own way without any status, but it's still a big gamble when you're talking about these major names. And to hit on both of those guys, I mean, you knew that they had the talent, but it doesn't always translate to the big tour. For them to sign both of them and for both of them to hit almost immediately, and one of them already has a major under his belt, I mean, it's kind of tip your cap to them. I mean, they did their homework, they signed the right guys, and it's paid off.
And you look at some of the other really big signings for young players. The other one that comes to mind, which I'm not saying it hasn't worked out, because the jury is still out and will be out for many, many years on this, but Callaway signed Akshay Bhatia last year, and he had about as much status.
So young.
He had as much status as Matt Wolf, I believe, when he signed this contract. They had no status out there. They had to play their way on.
He's four years younger for sure,
and that's definitely worth stating.
But it did feel like he was going to come out and maybe not dominate, but you know, make a splash, Akshay.
It's
and that's kind of not turned out to be the case.
It's tough.
Whereas
with
Wolf and Morikawa, it's like they're contending.
I think that that's the difference in a college experience.
Yes.
I think that's the college experience, especially the competitive nature of collegiate golf. It's a totally different atmosphere than junior golf. And I think that the grind that college golf can put you through and managing your time with academics and everything else, these are all issues that you never have to face. As you guys know from all the time that you try to get with tour players when you're traveling on the road, a big aspect of being a professional athlete is time management. You get pulled in so many different directions. And when you go from junior golf to professional golf, you don't learn any of that time management, you know, all those skills required that you do when you're in college. That's a big part of the college experience, is just figuring out how to manage your time. And you don't get that when you go from junior golf to professional golf. So I do understand where you're going with that, Jay Wall. Is that 4 years of difference between Akshay and Matty Wolf? It's a world of difference in maturity, even though Akshay is a very mature kid. But I don't see any of the OEM signings of, you know, the younger players over the last 4 or 5 years panning out like Matt Wolf and Colin Morikawa have. I mean, they've really elevated.
Well, I think Hovland will be true. Hovland's right there in that conversation. Yeah, we can't overlook him.
Yeah, he's been.
But those were three superstars coming out at the same time, and Ping and TaylorMade both went in and they won those negotiations, and it worked out well for them.
So do you think that that the way that it's panned out with Colin Morikawa and Matt Wolf will get some of these OEMs to look at some of these younger players a little more seriously, or you think this is still going to be very much driven by top 10 in the world, or the guys that get paid, the guys that get the good deals, and you're going to have to earn your way into those deals?
I think they would be crazy not to look at the crop of guys coming up, because as we've seen, I mean, the training that starts so young in these golfers' lives, they can really come out and make an impact right away. You know, with things like AJGA and, you know, the college organizations, they're working with instructors their whole lives. They're getting dialed in with equipment, with guys like Ryan Ressa. I think it's worth the money to invest in recruiting and then invest in these players, because they can come out and win their first year out, obviously, win PGA Championship major.
And they capture people's imagination and attention, right? When Colin Morikawa wins the PGA. I think it's a risky venture, Jay Wall. I was going to say that.
It's a super risky venture, and I think when you have three guys hit in the same group of signing, I guess I would call it a signing class, because it's guys coming out of college signing those deals. You know, this is kind of like one of those like once in a generation classes. I mean, you're not going to see three guys hit like this. More often than not, a lot of these big signings don't pan out like this. And so, I mean, but again, it's tough because if you're not paying up for it, somebody else will. Even with the equipment endorsement pie getting smaller, that seems to be the area where manufacturers are a lot more inclined to splash the cash because they don't have to pay up for a big name, but yet they're still having to put a little bit of money in, but they can maybe see the ROI involved if it turns into a Wolf, Morikawa, Hovland situation. So it's still tough.
So before we round out our year in review, J-Wall, let's keep this short and tight. What is the one thing you're looking forward to this coming year on the PGA Tour?
Short and tight. That's not my game, Tim.
Mine either.
From a gear perspective, it's interesting. I kind of look at driver technology, and I don't know why. It's one of those things. I've heard a lot of rumblings about some new products coming out. I don't know. I'm kind of curious to see if we have any major changes in the driver space out on tour, whether it's, shaft or head related. I don't know. That's a spot where I'm kind of looking. We've kind of forgotten about it recently because it feels like there's a ceiling that we've reached, but I'll say driver.
Tursky, what are you looking forward to in the next 12 months in gear?
I want to see Tiger Woods put an arm lock putter in his bag. That's what I'm most looking forward to. And then second, I'll say I'm looking forward to some sort of decision from the USGA and the RNA. What are they going to do? Are they going to roll the golf ball back? Are they going to roll back driver technology? My guess is no, that they're never going to do anything and just keep talking about it. But you never know. I mean, it feels like this might be a year where a decision comes down with, Bryson averaging 417 yards on tour now.
We should get Gene on the pod.
Year, I don't know when it's going to be.
We should get Gene Parenti on the pod. We've doing a little bit of work behind the scenes with Gene lately. I know you guys have been working with Gene, but he's done some fascinating research over the last few months regarding rolling equipment back, and I think there's a lot of content that'll be coming out of that research that we'll be sharing with the golf community. And I would anticipate it factors into some of the decision making at the governing bodies. As far as how to go about addressing this. And that comment actually segues perfectly into what I'm looking forward to, and that is, do we see another proliferation in distance out on the PGA Tour based off of Tony Finau and Bryson DeChambeau? Do we see some more guys as we start to end up the year? We're heading into a new season this year. Obviously, all of the top players usually spend the first month of the new season because they don't have to worry about, the order, their ranking, so to speak, in order to get into events and get good draws. But if you're top 30 in the world, this is kind of the period of the year right now for the next 30 to 45 days, where if you're going to tackle a fitness regimen and start to try to get longer, you would probably do it right around now. Interesting, though, because you're going to have a few majors sprinkled in here during this time period when normally there wouldn't be. So does that make some people be a little more cautious when it comes to this? But my biggest thing to look forward into the PGA Tour is, do we start to see some guys like Tony that have the capability of bombing it, 360 to 400 yards? Do we see them start to use that skill set out on the tour and start to use it positively? I think right now, obviously the jury's still out, but for the guys that have tried to make a mark in adding distance, I would say the results have been more positive than negative at this point. Would you guys agree or disagree?
Absolutely, yeah.
For sure. And
although a short hitter, or a relatively short hitter in Colin Morikawa, won the only major so far. So
correct.
Maybe not a great feather in the cap of distance. But
right. I mean, he hits it significantly shorter than Rory and then DJ and some of those other guys, but he's not a short hitter by any stretch. He still thumps it out there well past the average amateur. He's not out there driving 400-yard par fours. When you hit it as straight as he does, you don't need to. So he hits it, so consistently straight with the same ball flight and trajectory every time. As you guys have noted from being out and watching him, it's almost robot-like. So should be exciting to see this coming year out on the PGA Tour. We're kicked off right away with a new event, Safeway. out in Napa Valley, and we'll have some exciting news that we can now officially share regarding TruSpec Tour now that we're starting the new season. So we'll get that teed up for next week's Fully Equipped. And with that, let's get into our gear spotlight for the week. J-Wall, I saw some stuff come out yesterday regarding a limited edition Scotty Cameron putter. Tell us some more.
Yep. So this kind of goes back to what we always hear, which is why can't I buy fill-in-the-blanks putter? Usually it's the putter. That seems to be the one club where everybody complains that they can't get these products. And a lot of the times, you know, they're tour-only prototypes. They're designed for a player because he's specifically trying to do one thing, and the manufacturers want to help make sure that he keeps the club in the bag, so they're willing to bend over backwards and make it happen. And this is, I'm starting to see a trend here from our friend Scotty Cameron. He's starting to listen to, and I'm not saying that he hasn't in the past, but he's listening to the recreational golfers, and he's executing on a lot of these products that they've really wanted. And I first look at the T22, the Torellium, that they rolled out. You know, that was a putter that everybody wanted to see an updated version of. You know, we had seen it in the button back that Brooks Koepka used to win a boatload of majors. And, you know, Scotty comes back and he brings out an iconic putter for them. And, you know, then we've got Justin Thomas. You know, Justin Thomas, you know, 4+ years ago, switched from a blade into a mallet. Scotty came out with a Futura version of that putter, the 5.5M, but it had the way the shaft was bent was supposed to mimic this little flare neck shaft that was on Justin's mallet that gave it the right amount of toe hang for his arcing stroke. And of course, gearheads being gearheads said, well, hold up. This isn't the same putter. I want the welded neck. And I laughed. I'm like, that's not something that you're going to just get from Scotty off the rack. And then here comes Scotty Cameron. He has a inspired by, which he's done in the past with Duval, Davis Love, Sergio Garcia, Tiger. And now he's doing one with JT. It's a collaboration of JT's X5 prototype putter that he has. It has the welded neck. It's limited to 2,020 pieces. It's $850, which people are already complaining about, which, again, I love because they want the putter, they want the welded neck, but then they complain about the price, which totally goes in line with gearheads in the way that they operate.
100%.
This is the putter that everybody wanted. It's basically an exact replica of JT's putter. He worked directly with Scotty on this, down to the design of the head cover. It's got his signature on the bottom of this. It's a really cool looking putter. It even has, JT wanted the circle T stamped on the heel of the face, and Scotty said, I can't put the circle T on there, man, but I'll do a JT with the circle around it. It's a cool looking putter, and I think it satisfies that request that a lot of those golfers that wanted to use JT's putter. It's one that's, you know, gotten him to number one in the world. He won the PGA Championship with this putter. It's a pretty important putter for JT. It's been a part of 12 of his 13 tour wins. So, it's now out there. You just got to pay $850 for it.
Did they make it in lefty, J-Wall?
How cool.
Get out of here. What are you talking about? They're not making that in lefty. No chance.
I was gonna ask if you were gonna put one in play, and then I was like, they probably don't have a lefty.
Only if I want to go righty.
This is one of those, like, you know, you made it when moments for JT. Like, you get a signature putter line with Scotty. It's like you got to pinch yourself getting that call from Scotty, who's like, hey, I want to make your putter a signature putter. It's like, yes, let's go.
There's actually a funny story that I got to tell really fast. So I talked to Scotty last week, which, again, this is part of the job. I got to say that I still,
all time name drop.
I still, all time. It's just like, it's kind of one of those, like, am I seriously doing this on a Friday afternoon? Scotty calls me and we just talk putters and
casual talk with Scotty,
about the new JT putter. but he told a hilarious story, and I did a gear talk with him for the .com. If you want to read his whole thing, I went through, you know, the first time he met JT when he was 9 years old to kind of the collaboration. But one of the things that stuck out about this was they did a shoot for this putter and some other products, and JT was there, and they had one of these putters, one of these inspired by JT putters at the event. And JT was, you know, everything's wrapping up, they're putting chairs away, and he asks one of the marketing folks, hey, can I take this stuff with me, the stuff that's, you know, basically for the putter that's made for him? And they're like, no, JT, you cannot take this stuff. This is not out yet. No chance. Sorry. So what does JT do?
Takes it all.
He takes the putter. And
steals one.
He takes the only putter, and they didn't realize until later. And so somebody texts Scotty, and they're like, Scotty, I think JT took the putter. So he texts JT, and he says, hey, did you walk away with the putter by chance? And he texts Scotty back with a smiley face emoji with, this is awesome.
Unreal.
Yep. So he ended up getting the first one, but he had to swipe it to get it out the door.
Steal his own putter.
I love it. Steal his own putter.
I do love
that. That's the five-finger discount.
Exactly.
So from now in perpetuity, if Justin Thomas walks off a green and looks at his caddy after missing a putt and he goes, I'm just a crappy putter. If I'm a caddy, I'm looking at him going, you have your own putter line with Scotty Cameron, bro. You're not a bad putter.
Can't say it anymore.
Can't say it anymore, pal.
It's over now.
But yeah, this is really exciting. I mean, I like that Scotty's doing some of these things, whether it was the Trillium earlier this year. I'm all for, you know, letting the people have some of the really cool stuff that is some of the iconic products that you've made in your brand, especially when it comes to putter. You know, when you're talking about driver, putting a triple extra stiff, you know, 70 gram shaft in a driver, yeah, that doesn't really matter to the average retail golfer because they can't hit it. But when it comes to putters, you know, you're not talking about technology that's requiring speed and, you know, a lot of aptitude in order to be able to use it and enjoy it. And so I like seeing this out of Scotty Cameron, where they're releasing a limited, limited edition product that's directly correlates to one of the products that they've been so successful with out on the PGA Tour with Justin. So be curious to see who ends up putting one in play of some of the players and folks I know that would be candidates to grab one of these pieces. You said there are 2,020 pieces that are being made.
Yep.
Yeah, it's
$50. Go pick one up.
Yep. But
we got to talk about another Titleist product too.
Yeah, the new driver launch. There's not a lot that's come out here. I know that it hit the conforming list fairly recently. The product looks really cool. Looking at the sole of the product, I see a little bit of an inertial bar there, similar to what you've seen in other products. But I'll get my hands on the product next week for the first time to do some work and testing with it and see how it performs. So really exciting.
They've been pushing speed with these products, with the TS. Yeah. Titleist Speed. I would imagine they're probably trying to continue that project and adding more speed. You want to know who I just saw testing the new driver?
Who's that?
Tommy Fleetwood.
Interesting.
Ooh.
TSI 3. So possible, possible big name using the driver the very first week out on tour. So
he's been in TaylorMade product, hasn't he?
He has TaylorMade in Ping as well. He was Ping product. So yeah, he's kind of gone back and forth, but yeah, predominantly TaylorMade. But you know, we talk about the speed. If Fleetwood's testing it, you know, it's not in the bag yet, but that could be a nice feather in the cap for first week out if you can get a big name to use your driver.
For sure, and the interesting thing to note there is
important to make a splash quick.
Fleetwood is not on contract, so he has the latitude to be able to play whatever he wants. So that's kind of interesting to see that he's transitioned into the new driver so quickly here, or at least testing it. Tells me that it's probably pretty good if he's already willing to go so far as to getting it tested on the golf course and start using it in play. So we'll see how that pans out, but I have high hopes for all the new Titleist fairway woods and metals and drivers. Just looking at what they did, going from their previous iteration of fairway metals and drivers into the TS line, it was such a substantial leap forward for them that if they're able to make another leap forward on the same scale, going from 917 to the TS product, if the TS and TSI product is that big a difference, you know, I have high hopes for them as far as getting a set of products out there to consumers that they not only hit further. I mean, Titleist have always been very consistent, very straight performers, great sound, great aesthetics, but they were somewhat challenged in years past in ball speed and some of the flight dynamics. If they can retain the aesthetics and the sound and the consistency and the accuracy and add a little bit more speed, which they already did with TS, and then also add some better flight control properties with spin reduction, you could be looking at a product that really takes off, not just at tour, but at retail level. There was a period of time there last year, right, J-Wall, where Titleist was on a bit of a run with their driver. They had quite a few winning bags in a row. It almost seems like 4 or 5 weeks in a row it was a Titleist driver in the winner's circle.
Yeah, it was not just the drivers. I mean, they were winning counts across the board from drivers, yeah, all the way down to putter. And you're right, but it was the driver for me. I remember writing a story about it, that, you know, that was the big one for them, because they never really were a leader in driver counts, and all of a sudden they were digging it.
Our first fully equipped interview with Charles Howe, you know,
yeah,
when he mentioned switching from his previous manufacturer relationship into a Titleist relationship, he said the impetus for doing so was the TS driver line. And if they had not improved the driver and ended up producing the TS driver line, he probably wouldn't have been in the Titleist product. So exciting stuff over at Team Titleist, and I'm sure that they're going to continue to make great products and innovate, and excited to see what comes out of them, not just this fall, but then when we head into the spring and into 2021. So with that, I think that covers Gear's spotlight for the week. We do have a mailbag question, is my understanding, from Joe Lukes, I believe it is.
Yes, we do. And he wants to know, on the pod, we've talked about Tony Finau playing a lower lofted Ping G410 Plus with the hot melt low and forward. He wants to know, what is the reason Finau doesn't just go into the LST head?
Well, great question. The LST head is going to have different mass properties than the regular head. It's also going to have different, you know, club head dimensions than the regular issue head. This is something that we would probably have to ask Kenton Oakes to know the real answer on. Kenton would have the answer as far as why they went this route, as far as de-lofting, opening the face, and changing the mass properties instead of just going with the LST. When you de-loft a driver, you're going to open the face a little bit, so it makes the face look a little more open. That could be something that's aesthetically more appealing to Tony. He may like the overall shaping of the head, but just doesn't like the ball flight properties as far as spin rates. You know, over these last few weeks, we had mentioned that Tony was being a little bit more aggressive off the tee with his swing and generating more speed. And because he was generating more speed and trying to hit it harder, that, you know, the ball flight had gone up and gotten a little spinnier for him. So to maintain that, he's trying to control the ball flight a little better and hit it lower. He probably didn't want to make a radical change where he was moving away from a head that aesthetically looked very similar to what he'd been getting comfortable with. So I'm sure that, you know, aesthetic comfort, I'm sure that the way that the face looked open at address when you de-loft it probably played a little bit into that. And then, you know, obviously there may be some other criteria for the reason why he decided to go with a de-lofted 410 product instead of a 410 LST. But, you know, it's with every player, it's a little different. You know, you remember Keegan Bradley using a SimMax D this year. Why in the world would a tour player use a SimMax D product, draw product? Well, he was doing it because of the depth of the face and some of the other characteristics he was seeing out of the driver. It wasn't necessarily the draw properties that he was seeing out of it. And then when you look at Tony, obviously he starts to set up with a very you know, a specific aesthetic and likes to look at it a certain way. And it may just turn out that 410, not the LST edition, but the regular 410 edition, just sat a little better to his eye. So they wanted to try to figure out a way to make it work by changing the mass properties and face angle and loft. So, you know, for all of our retail golfers out there that are listening, you know, I think ultimately sticking to the product as far as not trying to add hot melt, not trying to get too crazy with it, unless you're working with a PGA professional or teacher, or even better, a professional club fitter that really knows what they're doing, try to keep it more simple than getting more complicated. I think that's a decent guideline to give you folks. I find a lot of golfers over the handicap of 5 or 6, they try to make this game more complicated than it has to be. And at the end of the day, if you have an LST product out there that's designed to lower the spin, go that route instead of trying to de-loft open face and change, you know, mass properties on a driver. There's a lot higher likelihood that you're going to ruin the driver trying to add hot melt and change hot, you know, try to change mass properties than if you were to just, you know, buy the LST version of the product. So that would be my little piece of advice to our listeners out there. And with that, I think that's a wrap for episode 58, guys. No interview this week, as we mentioned. We do have quite a few awesome interviews teed up. We mentioned Gene Parenti, Mark Blackburn, Kevin Chappell, Aaron Baddeley coming up over these next few weeks. So we're going to have a lot of really interesting, neat folks to speak to on Fully Equipped. And with that, I think that's a wrap for episode 58. Thanks for listening for all you folks out there. And if you're looking for more gear news, you can always find us on social media. On Instagram, you can find us at @FullyEquippedGolf. And on Twitter, you can find us @Fully_equipped. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll catch you next week.